Hello, this is Irene Bullard. I'll be reading the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Tuesday, October 9th, 2018. Let's begin on the front page. Face hooked. Forum addresses social media. Keynote speaker says parents need to understand Facebook. The answer to teens and young adults being addicted to social media and the resulting anxiety and depression is not to tell them to get off of Facebook. You can't just say, get off social media, said a clinical psychologist who spent 3 years exploring Facebook and evaluating its effect on relationships, because it is their world. Parents need to understand social media, advised Susana Flores. Flores, who is in practice with psychology specialists in Phoenix, was the keynote speaker on Monday for the second annual Behavioral Health Community Forum presented for youths and adults by McLean County, the city of Bloomington, and the town of Normal. About 200 people attended the forum in Uptown Normal, with sessions at the Normal Theater and the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Topics included suicide prevention, bullying, self-harm, and relaxation techniques. Flora's topic was Face Hooked, how Facebook affects our emotions, relationships, and lives. I'm a huge fan of social media, she admitted. Teens and young adults have a voice like never before. Flores focused her remarks on Facebook because it has been the most popular social media network since 2009. But I'm talking about all social media, she said, noting the top users of social media are teens and young adults. One problem is the person who is presented on Facebook is not the complete picture of the person in real life, Flores said. The extreme example is the 83 million fake Facebook profiles. A second problem is people are spending more time on social media and less time socializing in person or over the phone. Dinner parties have become a thing of the past, and even people on dates often spend part of their dinner on their smartphones, she said. The message is, whatever is on my phone is more important than the person in front of me, she said. That means people are missing the nuance and joy of conversation and time for listening and reflection, which leads to misunderstandings, Flora said. The anonymity of social media also allows people to say things they might not say in person, leading to cyberbullying, which can lead to anxiety and self-harm and suicide. More than one in three adolescents has experienced cyberbullying. Flores gave the example of a teen who died by suicide after years of cyberbullying that led to physical assault and public shaming. What people assume is private has shifted, she said. People feel obligated to respond to push notifications, and use of their smartphones becomes like an addiction. There is a fear of missing out, she said, but this has led people to believe that they have lost control of their lives. Flores said teens have told her, "We can't just get off Facebook because that's where our friends are." A mother and daughter who attended Flores' address, Carrie Schmidt of Hudson and her daughter, Madeline, 16, agreed. You could easily say stop being on Facebook, but it's such a part of their lives, Carrie Schmidt told the Pantograph after Flores' talk. People don't put up posters anymore. Everything is announced on Facebook. In response, parents and their children need to have a close relationship with each other that includes discussing mental health and social media, the Schmidts said. Parents should be friends on social media with their children and their children's friends, they said. It's their world, Carrie Schmidt said, and we need to be a part of it. Social media can be dangerous, acknowledged her daughter, but it's also opened up opportunities for people to talk and to get the help they need. Among others attending were Jack Pitts of McLean and Seth Klesig, a special education teacher in Hayworth. Pitts said his son experienced cyber and physical bullying, but he was able to overcome it with help from Klesing, friends, and Bloomington-based PATH, providing access to help. I've seen more and more kids with anxiety and depression every year, Klesig said. Parents need to talk with their children about the dangers that are out there. Never give up on your kids, Pitt said. Let them know you love them always. Said Floris, we have to get back to communicating in real life, the way we were meant to. Social media will never be a substitute for the real thing. How to help. It's possible to have a healthy family life and be active on social media. Here's advice from clinical psychologist Susanna Flores with input from a mother and daughter, Carrie and Madeline Schmidt, who attended Flores' talk on Monday. No one under 14 years of age should be on Facebook. Parents should be friends on social media with their children and their children's friends. Monitor what your children and their friends post. Discuss it with your children. If anything is concerning, talk with them immediately. Recognize that Facebook owns everything that you post and delete. Don't post anything that you would not tell someone. Discuss with your children's schools their social media policy. Schools should be active with social media safety beyond a once-a-year presentation. Once a week, take a two-day social media break. Respect people's privacy, take care of yourself, and spend in-person time with people. BN artist Gregor dies at 89. Retired distinguished professor of art was a constant inspiration. Barry Blinderman will always remember Harold Gregor as a constant inspiration. He helped us see the beauty in the agrarian Midwest, said Blinderman, former director of Illinois State University's University Galleries, upon learning of Gregor's death on Monday. He was one of those individuals who exemplified aging with grace, working each day, carrying paintings up and down his steep studio stairway, two steps at a time. May his memory be a blessing. Gregor, a retired distinguished professor of art at Illinois State University, whose work was displayed at the White House under President Barack Obama, died at age 89, leaving behind the downtown Gregor Gallery and a celebrated legacy as a landscape painter, teacher, and mentor. Much of our understanding of contemporary landscape painting, especially of Midwest imagery, is due to his teaching and his legacy as an exhibiting professional artist, said McLean County Arts Center Executive Director Doug Johnson, one of Gregor's students at ISU. If you think locally, every artist, myself included, pursued painting and landscaping as a major part of our practice, as part of the great teaching that he provided, said Johnson. You can't throw a dart into a crowd of ISU alums without everyone knowing a little bit of Harold Gregor. Gregor, a Michigan native, already was well-traveled when he started to oversee the PhD candidates program in the ISU Art Department in 1970. He studied and taught across the nation, experimenting across painting styles before becoming an early master of modern realism. He took something that we could all recognize in the landscape and really made it exceptional, said Kendra Pates, now director and chief curator of University Galleries. It's not always an obvious beauty in the way a mountain or a sunset over an ocean is, but he found what was special and heightened that. Mike Will, director of the ISU School of Art, where Gregor once taught, said, it's important to acknowledge Gregor was renowned not only in central Illinois, but around the world. After retiring in 1995, he continued to contribute to ISU and Bloomington Normal while exhibiting work in Chicago and New York. Will said he especially valued talking to Gregor about painting and about those benefiting from an endowment created by the artist and his wife Marlene to help ISU art students learn by traveling, as Gregor did. It's amazing to think that for 70 years as an adult, if not all 89 years, each day he thought of himself as an artist and he had something in his mind he had to get onto canvas. Each time I saw him, he had a little paint on his hand, said Will. He was not only a special human being, but a special painter the world can continue to enjoy. Daily Digest. Hinojosa to speak at ISU. Maria Hinojosa, award-winning anchor and reporter for PBS, NPR, and CNN, is the keynote speaker at the November 7th Latino Cultural Dinner at the Hancock Stadium Clubhouse at Illinois State University in Normal. Tickets for the 5 p.m. event are on sale through October 30th or until sold out and can be purchased at housing.illinoisstate.edu. Tickets are $20 for students without a meal plan, faculty, staff, and members of the community. Students with a meal plan can attend the event for one swipe. Doors will open at 4:30 p.m. Over her 30-year career, Hinojosa has won awards for her reporting with PBS, CNN, WNBC, NPR, and anchoring the Emmy Award-winning talk show, Maria Hinojosa One-on-One. She also anchors and executive produces the Peabody Award-winning show, Latino USA, distributed by NPR, and co-hosts In the Thick, Futuro Media's new political podcast. Today in History. Today is Tuesday, October the 9th, the 282nd day of 2018. There are 83 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On October the 9th, 1776, a group of Spanish missionaries settled in present-day San Francisco. Thought for today. It is not good for all our wishes to be filled. Through sickness, we recognize the value of health. Through evil, the value of good. Through hunger, the value of food. Through exertion, the value of rest. Written by Dorothy Canfield Fisher, American author and essayist, 1879 to 1958. Today's Flick Fact. Question. If a mass power outage blankets the area, what happens at Illinois State University? And the answer is, the university switches on the 27 emergency generators that have been installed with the capacity to produce 6,600 kilowatts of power. Wind farm decision nears special use permit application filed in DeWitt County. A decision on the first ever proposed wind farm in DeWitt County, an investment of $300 million, could come as early as next month. Trade Wind Energy Incorporated has officially filed the 1,270-page special use permit application with the county zoning office, meaning the Regional Planning Commission could consider the application on October 16th. The Zoning Board of Appeals is scheduled to meet November the 5th, and the permit could go before the County Board November the 15th. The Commission and the ZBA will make recommendations to the County Board that can approve the request, attach conditions, or deny the application. Alta Farms is excited for the opportunity to develop this project in DeWitt County, said James Griffin, an attorney for the company. We look forward to appearing before the DeWitt County Regional Planning Commission, the DeWitt County Zoning Board of Appeals, and the DeWitt County Board on this application in the coming months. In its application, Trade Wind Energy indicates the company plans 68 turbines with a maximum total tower height not to exceed 591 feet. The $300 million investment would create 254 jobs during construction and 21 permanent jobs during operation, said the company. Additionally, it would provide an estimated $21 million in tax revenue to the Clinton School District, more than $5 million in DeWitt County property taxes, another $3.3 million to Barnett, Clintonia, and Wapella townships in property taxes, and $5.9 million in property taxes for community colleges, fire departments, and libraries over the next 40 years, based on company data. The project encompasses more than 12,000 acres in a footprint stretching from Waynesville to Wapella. If approved, construction would begin as soon as mid-2019, with commercial operation targeted by the end of 2020. The company has shown interest in DeWitt County for more than a decade. Opponents already have fought hard to strengthen the county's wind farm ordinance code, gaining some victories but losing several others, including limiting the heights of the turbines. In reviewing Tradewind's application, it is clear that it does not meet the criteria for a special use permit in DeWitt County, said DeWitt County resident Andrea Rhodes, one of the wind farm's opponents. Not only does it fail to meet the criteria, it is incomplete, with important project details missing, which is concerning to me as a resident living near the proposed project. No other company would be allowed to pursue a project of this magnitude with so many important details missing that will impact the day-to-day lives of nearby residents. Rhodes will host a community meeting to discuss the special use permit at 6 p.m. Thursday at the Vespasian Warner Public Library in Clinton. In its application, the company promises to abide by the recently adopted changes to the wind farm ordinance, including the use of an aircraft lighting mitigation system. Alta Farms is still in the process of determining which of these systems is best suited for use at the project, and we anticipate this effort continuing for several more months, including negotiating availability and pricing, said Tom Swierczewski, development director for the project. Once that is completed, Tradewind Energy will submit a marking and lighting study to the county board for approval, he said. The turbines, according to the application, will not come from Trinity Structural Towers that has a manufacturing facility in Clinton. Previously, Tradewind Energy officials said the factory did not manufacture the turbine size necessary for the project. The city okays business registry fee hikes. The City of Bloomington will create a mandatory registry cataloging an estimated 3,500 to 4,500 businesses, despite some objections about the one-time $50 registration fee. The City Council voted Monday to create the business registration program, along with increasing more than 100 fees for a variety of city-issued permits, annual licenses, inspections, and services. Both measures were tied to balancing the city's budget for this fiscal year. I am never a big fan of additional fees, but I think the safety aspect of it is what convinced me that it's a pretty good thing that we are doing, said Ward 3 Alderman Mboka Mwalambwe of the new business registry. For each business in the city, the registry will include contact information, what products are sold, and what materials are used. Officials said such information would help police and firefighters responding to emergencies. Alderman Jamie Mathey of Ward 2 and Scott Black of Ward 7 cast the dissenting votes related to the business registry, which passed 6-2 with one absent. This agenda item to me is us going out and telling people that you must do this thing we want you to do, mostly for our reasons. And by the way, we want you to pay for it, said Mathey, a business owner. And so I will be voting no to this particular agenda item. Normal uses its business registry for similar purposes, but Normal does not charge a fee to register. Charlie Moore, president and CEO of the McLean County Chamber of Commerce, told the Pantograph last week the chamber favored a business registration process as long as it did not have a fee attached to it. Moore added, the chamber wanted the city's program to be consistent with Normal's program. He attended the council's meeting Monday but did not speak. In addition to generating more revenue for the city, the registry will allow the city to notify businesses more easily of issues affecting them, such as road construction or building safety concerns, officials said. New businesses subject to local taxes, such as the food and beverage tax, also could be identified, they said. The information also will be used for charting future economic development. The fact that no one knows for sure how many businesses are out there was one of the reasons offered for creating the registry. Qualified charitable organizations and people with home-based businesses would be required to register, but would not have to pay the fee under the proposal. Those that fail to register or are late in renewing with the city each year would be subject to a $75 fine. When the council approved in April a $210 million budget for this fiscal year, which began May the 1st, it was with the understanding the city would have to make some spending cuts and increase the fees to eliminate a $2.9 million deficit. The business registration program and revision of some of the city's fees are anticipated to generate at least $400,000 in new revenue. The fee changes are intended to more accurately reflect the city's administrative costs related to the functions for which the fees are levied. During public comments, business owner and developer Joe Haney said that he was concerned about raising fees when there is a downturn in residential construction. "People are leaving Illinois, leaving Bloomington," said Haney. "I know we need all of the revenue we can get, but there's got to be another way." There is a photograph on this page that says, "Ceremony kicks off ISU homecoming. Illinois State University President Larry Dietz and Normal Mayor Chris Coos light up the trees to kick off homecoming week on Monday in Uptown Normal." And it was taken at night. It's quite beautiful with the black background of the darkness and the trees lit up with pretty twinkling white lights. Another photograph is of Ryan and Cindy Abbott with their son Race, 13, enjoying the lights reflecting on the water feature in Uptown Circle at the end of the lighting ceremony. And that is also quite beautiful because in the whole black picture, all you see are the white lights in the trees and then the white lights reflected in the pool of water. Quite beautiful. And the people are wearing a lot of red, so that's a nice contrast. Police: little cooperation in weekend shooting. Police said Monday they are getting little cooperation from the victim of a weekend shooting in Normal. Police said a 16-year-old boy was shot around 5 p.m. Saturday near the Amanda Brook Apartments in the 1400 block of East College Avenue, but offered few details beyond that. No arrests have been made in connection with the incident, which is at least the 15th gunfire incident so far this year in the Twin Cities. "We've really got nothing," said Normal Assistant Police Chief Eric Klingel. "He hasn't been cooperative, and nobody else is telling us much either." Police said a family member called to report the boy had been shot and that the wound did not appear to be life-threatening, and the incident remains under investigation. Anyone with information is asked to call the Normal Police Department at 309-454-9535. NCHS selects homecoming court. Normal Community High School has named its 2018 homecoming queen and king. They are Ellie Walker, daughter of Steve and Teresa Walker of Bloomington, and Taeed Dismukes, son of Lateka Wooten of Bloomington. They were announced Friday at the school assembly. The homecoming dance was Saturday. The members of the court are Daylon Boddy, Caviar Crawford, Zach Michael, Jacob Simonson, Tristan Bixby, McKenna Davis, Kim Holm, and Mady Tomlinson. Central Catholic names queen and king. Central Catholic High School has named Abby Lewis and Jaron Means the school's 2018 homecoming queen and king, and they were announced at halftime of Friday's homecoming game against Rantoul High School. Lewis is the daughter of Stan and Karen Lewis of Normal, and Means is the son of Doug and Mikeline Means of Bloomington. Members of the court were Christine Deneen, Morgan Cook, Renata Lee, Megan Sheehan, Kennedy Snyder, Thomas Costigan, Joseph Harris, Thomas Killian, Thomas Nelson, and Christopher Russell. Barger takes sectional medalist honors. BHS sophomore wins at Lincoln, moves to 2A state as an individual. TJ Barger flirted with a penalty stroke when his drive on number 17 rolled down a steep hill and ended up a foot short of the creek during Monday's Class 2A Lincoln Boys Golf Sectional. Then on number 18, his second shot into the par 5 stayed just short of the out-of-bounds stake on the left side of the green. I heard Alex McCullough of Quincy Notre Dame was tied with me, so I guess I had to go for it and try to get a birdie, said Barger. Then I missed a four-footer. No matter, Barger's aggressive style still paid off. The sophomore fired a 1-over-par 72 at Windy Lincoln Elks to earn medalist honors and advance to the state tournament at Wybring Golf Club at Illinois State for the second straight year. Barger was the lone area individual to make it out of the sectional. Central Catholic's Parker Wisdom and Lincoln's Drew Singleton were in a four-man playoff for the final individual qualifying spot for those not on an advancing team. All four golfers parred number one before Springfield's Zach Richmond sank a 5-foot par putt with darkness quickly closing in on the second extra hole, number six, to grab the final spot. Central Catholic, which won last week's Rantoul Regional, shot 334 to play seventh in the 12-team field, and Bloomington tied for eighth at 339. Barger ended a stroke ahead of McCullough and Justin McCoy of Champaign Central. After making the turn at the 2-over-par 37, Barger went 1-under on the back with 1 birdie and 8 pars. I like short courses because it gives me a chance to shoot really well, said Barger. Of the 6,000-yard Lincoln Elks layout, my goal is to win. I also wanted our team to advance. Anything Barger does won't surprise BHS coach Mike McClellan. Barger had one of the best rounds in the state this year when he fired a 7-under-par 65 at Pekin's Lick Creek Golf Course to win the Dragon Classic by 8 strokes. With only one senior in his lineup, Monday McClellan can't wait for next season to arrive. We got better from top to bottom as a team, and our freshmen next year will make us better, he said. I'm proud because we have not gotten out of regionals, 2 sectionals in a couple of years. Names and faces. Graduate. Alexander Friedman of Pontiac received a Bachelor of Science in Exercise and Sport with highest honors from University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. He majored in Exercise Science Fitness Track. Scholarship. Gabrielle Kuhlman of Lincoln is one of 19 winners of the John W. Maitland Jr. Joseph F. Warner Long-Term Care Nurses Scholarship Fund scholarships from the Illinois Healthcare Association. The winners receive a scholarship of up to $1,000 per semester. Kuhlman is studying to become licensed practical nurse at Heartland Community College in Normal and works at St. Clara's Manor in Lincoln. Scholarship. Megan Ift of Fairbury has received a $1,000 Chevy truck scholarship from the National FFA organization. The Prairie Central High School student plans to go to the University of St. Francis. College honors. Illinois Wesleyan University School of Theater Arts has been recognized by OnStage Blog for ranking 7th on the blog's list of the top 25 BFA musical theater programs for 2018-19. OnStage Blog's annual rankings recognize the best colleges in the country for performing in addition to dance, design, and tech. We've come to the end of the first half hour of the Pantograph. Please stay tuned.